Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There can only be one. I mean, that's a Highlander reference, but it does work a bit with Solo, surely? Hello, I'm Paula Blair, and you're very welcome to Audiovisual Cultures, the podcast that explores different areas of art, media, film, all that sort of stuff. I've got a reissue for you today. About a year and a half ago, when I switched to Acast hosting, a few episodes got lost and weren't scraped to the new site. One of those was episode 32, in which Dr. Andrew Scheel and I chat about Solo, a Star Wars story, and what better day to re-release this than on May the 4th. Before we time travel back to 2018, huge thanks to our most splendid patrons at patreon.com/AVCultures for keeping the fire lit, and to anyone who engages with AV Cultures Pod on socials and boosts the show. It's so nice of you. We really appreciate it so much. I'd like to thank Dick James Hall for their kind words in an Instagram story back in April that said, and I quote, "Hi folks, I would love it if you could support AV Cultures Pod in any way that you can. Their podcast is a great force of good within audiovisual culture and is definitely worth listening to." That is high praise indeed. Thank you, Dick. I really, really appreciate you saying that publicly. Need all help we can get. Right, so enough blathering on from me. Let's hand over to the remastered past Paula and Andrew, and may the force be with you. This week, I am joined again by film historian and Star Wars fan, Andrew Scheel, to have a bit of a discussion, but also a bit of a rant about Solo, a Star Wars story. We finally got around to seeing it. If you listen regularly, you might remember we opted out of seeing it, and instead we did an experiment where we went to see two different films at the same time, and that was episode 19, and our discussions were about The Rape of Reese Taylor and Edie. We got round to watching, on a whim actually, Solo at home and weren't especially impressed. We've got not that long a discussion about it, but we'll see what you make of it. So if you are a Star Wars fan, it'd be really great to hear your thoughts on that, because I'm not a fan, and we talk a bit about the fandom around Star Wars as well. Star Wars is such a huge cultural phenomenon, and it was one that I just would not engage with for quite a long time, and I have actually really enjoyed some of the more recent additions to the franchise, but didn't particularly enjoy Solo. So for now, enjoy. Well, we've just watched Solo. What is this, 923 in the installments of Star Wars, a George Lucas money spinning franchise
story? Yeah, it's 1.2.3, I think, as far as the ordering goes. Right, so, franchise. We've been putting it off, we've finally seen it, and it was disappointing.
What a waste of Thandi Newton and Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Phoebe
Waller-Bridge. And, I mean, I love Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
But he's better than this.
Paul Bettany,
frankly.
Looking sinister, lovely. Erin Kellyman, just looking otherworldly.
What has she been in? Because she was really familiar, but I don't know. She's probably one of those people who, she just seems so sage that...
Not much.
I've heard of the things that she's been in, Raised by Wolves, Les Miserables, the TV series that's filming at the minute, so it hasn't been on. Oh, we watched Raised by Wolves, didn't we? One episode. Is that the one that's about Caitlin Moran?
Yes.
Yeah, we've seen one episode of that, so that's where we recognise her.
Okay, so Good Stock of People, Emilia Clarke being statuesque and sinister,
don't know, though. Her character is just such a washout because she never looks confident in what she's doing, and it's really disappointing because she could have been really badass.
Which brings us... Oh, and Warwick Davis in it for about 8 seconds.
Waste of Warwick Davis, which is never forgivable.
I think Warwick Davis just grew up loving science fiction, and so people come to him and say, do you want to be in the science fiction?
Yes.
And he goes, yeah. Doesn't even let them get to the end of the sentence. Why are we doing this podcast, which is going to be very short? We did it because Star Wars seems to have backslidden.
We didn't go and see this in a cinema. That was one of those ones I think we talked about at the time where there was loads of really fascinating stuff on the night that it was on, and we went to see two different things. That was our AD and We See Taylor episode way ages ago that we did.
Yeah.
Each of us went to see one of those instead of seeing this, and we've just watched it at home on a whim, really. Cards on the table. I am not a Star Wars fan.
Cards on the table. I'm a Star Wars fan.
You're a super big Star Wars fan. And I had intended to never, ever watch anything to do with Star Wars ever in my life. I would have been happy to die never having seen one of them.
Whereas the other day, I received an email from my big brother, which had an attachment, which was a guide to how to make an X-Wing in origami.
So this shows you the difference in our backgrounds here, people.
It's a miracle we're sitting in the same room right now. But we agreed on the fact that this film backslid. Look at all those... special effects artists.
I know. Well, as I was explaining, you're the reason why I've seen any of them. Until now, I had seen them a little bit in a sort of correct order, because I will not watch the Phantom Menace beginning trilogy because they just look terrible.
Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith.
And I attempted to watch them when they first came on TV, and I was horrifically bored, and I just couldn't do it. And no matter how much affection I have for Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor, I just... no.
Yep.
It was so boring, I couldn't do it, and I just thought they were terribly made anyway. But we went to see Rogue One when it came out in the cinema, and I loved it. I had a brilliant time. And then I think we watched the original trilogy after that.
Yeah.
So for me, I saw those four in the right order.
And we've seen The Force Awakens, and we've seen...
We went to see Last Jedi.
Last Jedi.
In Belfast last year at Christmas.
Oh, very promising.
And I really enjoyed Rogue One and Last Jedi. I thought they were brilliant. And Rose was my favourite character in Last Jedi. Absolutely love her. And the robot was my second favourite. And the other robot was my other favourite.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Rogue One, you've got a woman and a Mexican are the heroes. And a robot with sass. And you had the blind Japanese guy and stuff. It was brilliant.
The robots with sass element, that is clearly deemed by the team of people behind this franchise to be the thing you must now put in every film. Because what we just saw... had a robot with sass.
And then they keep killing them off.
And they just die.
All of the people who were of any significance who died were women in this film, and that was really annoying me after a while, because it kept happening.
So Thandie Newton's character Val, she wasn't the first to die, but she died early on, and she was the most significant.
She'd had loads of lines
to die.
And the alien thingy died with lots of arms. He got shot slightly and then coughed, and you thought, well, he's obviously gonna die in 2 minutes.
His voice was Jon Favreau, it seems.
Just thought Rogue One and Last Jedi, they had made so much progress in terms of women being people and diversity in space.
What seems to have happened in this film is they went, okay, so we'll have our two female characters for about the first half of the film being nags, as in literally people who nag the male characters, and are just this voice of, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. And then we'll have them either killed or lost. And then in the second half of the film, we'll have a comeback where one of those characters returns and she's got her own agenda now and she's independent of the male character and she's grown up.
But that means that she looks sure about that agenda though.
Well, yeah, even when she's
never convinced by her.
Even when she's finally acted on it and gone her own way, she still looks utterly riven with guilt. That may just be
her face.
What's her name?
Emilia Clarke.
Clarke. Must be Emilia Clarke's resting face. She just looks really worried about herself.
She just looks constantly like, oh, he's a hero, he's the good guy. Oh, I'm such a terrible person, but I'm gonna do this anyway. Oh, I'm so conflicted. And I don't want to see, if you've made a decision, you've been decisive, be decisive about how you feel about that decisiveness. This is really infuriating.
In spite of all of this, all these elements in which the film says women are not quite worthy of the same esteem as men, it did still have this admitted caricature of a feminist rebellion in the form of what L3 was voiced by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Does, yeah. So they had a caricature of an uprising. Phoebe Waller-Bridge voices a droid who seems to have hips. And also they did genuinely have a relationship where Lando, played by Donald Glover, was actually in love with a droid.
Was he? Yeah. I got really confused by that because I thought she just thought he was.
Seemed to be, at the very least, highly enamoured with her, not completely in love with her. And she seemed to have gone...
As much as Lando could be in love with anyone other than himself.
Yeah, he got over it quite quickly.
Just thought she was telling herself that and that was the joke.
Possibly. But then he reacted really horribly to when she got mortally wounded.
Yeah, he was upset, but they'd been buddies for all that time.
And then really mourned for a little bit, at least, when she died.
And put her in the Falcon, but is prepared then to lose... Well, he doesn't think he's going to lose the Falcon in the card game at the end.
Actually, yeah, because at that point, the card game at the end where it's the second card game and it's one of those, oh, you thought he was going to win it in the first card game, now he won it in the second card game. All the callbacks.
I just keep thinking of all those internet crybabies. Man babies, I should say, who have said about the newer ones, this is not my Star Wars, this has ruined my childhood kind of thing. This is tracking back not just feminism and any agenda of equality in filmmaking, but it's just so predictable. At every turn you're going, oh well, this is going to happen now. Oh look, that thing I said was going to happen just happened for the whole 2 hours of the film.
He betrayed him, and then there was a furious action set piece. There was a lot of people shouting at each other.
There was lots of shouting in this film, and quipping and...
Shouting at each other with the incidental music's really loud, so that although they can clearly hear each other, we can't hear what they're saying. Mm. All these different things happening at the same time, and clearly people are able to weigh up all the different variables and go, oh, that means that we now need to do this, we need to change our plan. So it was one of these, we're going to tell you exactly what you need to know, but it's going to be in a heated piece of dialogue where two people are shouting at each other amidst a battle. One of the things that somebody mumbles during the shouted exchange is something which then determines the next 80 minutes of action in the film. Our feminist rebellion was also carried out by a straw feminist, a caricature of a feminist. I mean, L3, she has droid hips. She has a big sassy...
She has a sassy walk. It's the only way we can describe it.
Wiggling her hips
for want
she walks.
Of a better term.
Walk.
As if she's got a big ass as well. And she doesn't because she's a robot. It's just her legs are very wide apart.
She's got a big
pelvis. And I was wondering, is she a caricature of a black woman? Because there's a racial thing as well going on with, it's like a civil rights movement rather than a feminist movement in the way that she's talking.
She liberates droids from being forced to fight each other and being...
Who've been enslaved.
Yeah.
And Chewbacca finds some of his own kind in there as well. And he's, of course, being rescued from slavery by the hero white guy.
And the film is... We've overlooked this, but within about the first 15 minutes, Han and Kira are trying to flee Corellia, this planet where starships are made, and they're trying to flee as refugees. They don't have the right paperwork. They're trying to bribe their way through. Other people who are trying to travel are being harassed by stormtroopers, and so there's a refugee immigrant, a refugee migrant subtext going on there. So you've got refugees and migrants, you've got slaves, and you've got a feminist rebellion as well. So the film goes, these things are all great, mixes together fictional versions of all these things, but at the same time, the gender politics concerning how particular named characters interact with each other are all, the men know what to do, the women are clueless or nagging
or going, oh, you sure
conniving.
I don't think we should do this, we're not gonna fit, oh look, we did it.
So they're clueless, or they're nagging, or they're conniving, and they all have a sense of guilt. A sense of sexual guilt that Kira has because she's had to enter into this sexual relationship with the supervillain Dryden, played by Paul Bettany. If you'd had to have sex with somebody in order to basically survive...
And he's trained her to fight.
I wouldn't feel any guilt. Wouldn't you go into old
she's
friends
to
and
survive.
Going, you'll feel differently about me when you hear what I've had to do.
I don't know why she's slobbering all around Han, because he left her. 3 years later, it said.
I must admit, there's a certain pleasure that comes when you see the text that says 3 years later in a film, because it goes, great, I'm not going to have to sit through an explanation of what happened in these 3 years. We can now just spin onto a new situation and we can learn.
But they do just tell you about it verbally anyway.
When you've got these furious set pieces, it's important to have those interim moments when everything's calm and we're just re-establishing the aftermath of all of that and what now needs to happen.
Yeah.
But even those brief lulls did get quite boring because it was everyone just saying the plot.
It just felt like, I know all this because I've seen this film, I feel like, 10 times before. Just get on with it. Just do something. Show me something new, at least. That's where I felt Rogue One and Last Jedi stood quite well as films in their own right. There were predictable parts, but there were also parts where I thought, oh, I haven't actually seen something quite like this before, so this is quite exciting. Whereas this, I just felt it was really predictable the whole time.
And on the stylistics here, it was Abrams-esque, because there was lens flare, and there was things being permitted to go out of focus, and there was slightly wandering handheld camera.
It was a bit.
It was gritty in its stylistics. It was also gritty in its content, because there was mud and there was dust. This is a browny yellow film.
Also it's, quite a lot of humour.
Yeah.
Or attempts at
so it's
humour.
It's the gritty version of Star Wars that they got away from when they did the prequels, and that was clearly deemed to have just been stupid to have.
Because war was clearly, is quite messy.
Yeah, it was clearly deemed to have stupid to have moved away from that, so they've gone back to it with a vengeance. It's often pointed out that the first Star Wars film was all about garbage. When the two droids are picked up at the beginning by the Jawas are scavengers.
It's junk.
They end up in a garbage compactor on the Death Star. This is a universe which is old and where stuff is worn out. Is it? Sorry, it's not a universe, it's a galaxy. The point in this galaxy where there's age to this. So, lovely stuff there. Although they have turned the it's really dirty in this environment up to 11, particularly with the mud fight where Han first meets Chewbacca, which is just this grey scene of everyone getting covered in mud.
I don't know how just one shower after years of apparently of being in that stuff got all the knots out of his fur, frankly, but you know.
You'd have to get it all shaved off, wouldn't you? And that would have been interesting.
Either that or it's gallons of conditioner they've got in that, whatever that ship was that they'd got, where they joined the other ones, the Woody Harrelson and Andy Newton, John Favreau ones. I thought there was quite a lot of, just to expand on that, very general, as well as I love Song to JJ, it just felt like there was a lot of inflections of general science fiction and fantasy, because I thought in the soundtrack throughout, it just kept reminding me of Farscape, because there was that quite otherworldly opera singing going on. I don't know if you were picking up on that. The way it does in the Farscape titles, there was that high-pitched, almost Australian-like operatic singing going on. It was I just found it very similar in the soundtrack, to the point where it was distracting me rather than energising me in the scene. And also the car chase at the very start of the film. I mean, it was a generic car chase, but it felt like Back to the Future or something, and it felt a bit like, I think partly because it was putting me in mind of Back to the Future, it also felt a bit like Ready Player One as well.
Yeah. For the most part, they did a good job of going, here's a real world environment, and we're just going to put a few little sci-fi elements into it here and there. So, okay, yeah, there's going to be this really rugged mountainscape, and there's going to be a few tiny bits of buildings stuck to the side of these mountains. But for that first scene, it was just sci-fi stuff everywhere. I was thinking, none of this is photographic. This is all computer-generated environments, which is not a great way of getting your viewer invested in the human story or the interpersonal story.
Whatever the alien was that was being voiced by John Favreau with the many limbs, I was getting really distracted by the CGI-ness and the weightlessness of that character. I just couldn't really accept that he was really there, because he clearly wasn't.
If you find text useful with your podcasts, we've got two options for you. You can subscribe to Audiovisual Cultures podcast on YouTube for captioned videos, and you can visit audiovisualcultures.com and click the transcripts tab. Both sites are linked in the show notes, along with information about this episode.
Now, as for the next blank, 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 colon, a Star Wars story, which, for all we know, could be that medical droid that we saw at the beginning of episode 5, colon, a Star Wars story, there's nothing been announced yet. The only thing that's been announced is that we're going to get episode 9, the sequel to The Last Jedi, in...
Have they had to rework a lot of that, though, because of Carrie Fisher?
Well, I'm aware.
I'm asking that as if I care. Because Carrie Fisher was in Last Jedi a lot more than I thought she was going to be, actually. Yeah.
And I thought the fact that she had Jedi powers was something they were really setting up to be a big badass thing in the final film.
Right. Then they've had to make changes, of course.
If the way that this franchise now works is going to continue to be the way it works for a few years, we're going to have blank, 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 colon, a Star Wars story.
It feels like they're...
In summer 2019.
It feels like they're setting up something with this fella now playing young Han, because they've killed off old Han. So yeah, it feels like they're going to continue his adventures, which feels more like it should be an animated series or something like that, rather than a movie franchise.
For a good while, the franchise did exist solely as an animated series, the Clone Wars series.
Was that Ewok thing? I saw that when I was a kid.
Well, yes. I suppose what we must now ask is, does that count as canon? I think it does.
I don't care.
Yeah, blah, 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 colon. Some Ewoks having a bit of an adventure with some humans.
It was like a crystal thingy, I can't remember.
A Star Wars story.
Just had very vague images from it, because I find it boring then, even.
There's quite a few films that are called something, colon, a Star Wars story, short. A lot of shorts that have been produced recently.
Because George Lucas needs the money.
But nothing feature length in development, according to the old Internet Movies Database. I am searching for Ewok. 1984, The Ewok Adventure. I do remember this, yeah. Everyone got a little magical item, and everyone who went on the mission really needed a magical item, including the people who got magical items that were crap, who used them at the end and everything was fine. There's the Ewoks TV series from 1984. We are the Ewoks. Another spin-off which didn't really make a big impact on your youth, it seems.
When we were watching that, there was something about them talking about Chewie's... Well, Han is trying to translate for him. He's not sure if he said something along the lines of family or clan. And I said, do you think that could be a very obscure reference to that awful holiday special?
Yeah.
Which I have seen because of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and nothing else in the whole world would have got me to see any of that but that. And it's really quite astounding, because I think that was after the original Star Wars.
Yeah, I think it's what they did in the holiday period, either immediately after or the year after the original Star Wars, as a way of going, well, this is basically a franchise we're never going to turn into, into some sort of trilogy. So they just played with it. And yeah, result, a farce which has survived in spite of the efforts of George Lucas, rather than because of the efforts of George Lucas.
I think they've tried to bury it, but it's out there, people. So I was wondering if it was maybe some sort of nod to that, because in that Chewie has a very heteronormative life. He has a little housewife and a small child and other appendages.
Yeah.
A wooden house that looks like it's in the American North or something. And they're preparing for this festive time that's very similar looking to the Christian festival that's a bit based on a pagan festival that we have in this part of the world, this part of the galaxy. It's pretty awful, and it's quite embarrassing seeing Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford.
Yeah,
he's really uncomfortable in it. And Carrie Fisher are all, they all have little bits.
We've all been highly drugged and highly paid.
Because George had something on them, clearly.
And there was references galore. Well, of course, we had to have references to every time that anyone had mentioned anything about Han's backstory. So there had to be some reference to the fact that he had at some point been in the Imperial Navy.
The 12 parsecs thing.
The thing about parsecs. Parsec is a unit of distance. It's not a unit of time. They're stuck having to go, should we make the Kessel Run? There's no way you can make that in less than 12 parsecs. And no one being able to say, parsec's a unit of distance. So yeah, then they have that bit when they make the Kessel Run, and he goes, yeah, I just made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. And
which Chewie contests. And Han says, well, if you round it down, he's such a chancer.
You've also got references to that bit during the first Star Wars film when they're fleeing the Death Star, and Han and Luke both crew one of those guns each. And it's... That thing, they had to have one of the characters crew one of those guns and be really clueless about it. So to make a joke about how difficult it would be to actually do that. A bit of an allusion to stuff that happened on Tatooine. Everyone really wants to get to Tatooine to get a job working for this crime gangster, who of course is Jabba the Hutt. and a reference to setting up a cantina at some point.
Yeah, I thought that was leading to the cantina that keeps appearing.
The Mos Eisley cantina. And there was also a Ersatz cantina in this one as well.
Uh-huh.
And the characters at the cantina point in the film go into a bar and it's a bit dangerous. There's also a bit later on.
It's the saloon part of the western, yeah, isn't it?
There's a bit late on when in the phase when they're going to find Han, who is in this gambling den which has its own bar. So it's more of a dive of a bar than this one they initially go into, where L3 says, come on, let's go. They don't serve our kind here anyway, or they don't serve my kind here anyway. And that's a direct reference to one of the lines that the bartender in the Mos Eisley Cantina says in the original film that's called Star Wars. It's not called Star Wars, Episode 4: A New Hope. It's just called Star Wars. He says, we don't serve their kind here. The droids have to wait outside. So reference after reference after reference. This film was going, please regard this as canon. This is part of the franchise. And we will have to sleep on that, won't we?
It depends on, again, all the man babies who keep complaining about all the ruination of their childhoods, even though these are all separate films that belong to everybody. You grew up watching the other ones. Does this feel like it belongs with them?
Just.
But then I like the more recent ones, apart from this, because they felt different from those. They felt like something I could take part in and enjoy, whereas I feel really excluded by the other ones. And actually, I say that, but the original three, shall we say, so Star Wars, retrospectively renamed A New Hope, and then it's Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
And then
Return of the Jedi.
Princess Leia is such an amazing character. So I feel like in a way I'd missed out. But I appreciate her more, having seen her as an adult rather than as a child. And I knew Carrie Fisher as a writer, a comedian, a performer,
yeah,
better than I knew Princess Leia, which is probably fairly rare. So having seen the films after she died, I think probably meant a bit more for me. The people who get upset about these things need to realise they're actually, in the grand scheme of things, a minority. These films belong to all of us.
Technically speaking, they're the intellectual property of Walt Disney. And that means that's...
We all get to watch them.
The merchandising revenue goes.
You know
quite
what
right,
I
yes.
mean, though? For,
right.
They're for anybody to watch and enjoy or not enjoy for various reasons. And if you're going to be sniffy because women are doing stuff, well, this one's for you because women are doing pathetic things. I don't think Val would have sacrificed herself. It doesn't seem right for that character.
I was about ready to find that she had some sort of wingsuit that she could use to get out of there.
I know, but you'd think they'd built something like that in if they're going to make her work on those viaduct bridges, but no. She readily kaboom? No, I don't think so. There's no reason for anybody of truth. Anyway, I was not convinced. We've had a bit of a rant.
But nonetheless, Ron Howard, firm guiding hand at the film, got it in my other direction. It's just the Lawrence Kasdan and...
Ron Howard was brought in, wasn't he? Because the first person left, is that right?
Ooh.
I think he wasn't the original director for this. I'm pretty sure he was interviewed when it came out and he wasn't the original director. He took it over. It had a quite difficult production life anyway, and it was just felt like one of those studio things that had to be out for a certain time rather than something that was crafted to be the right kind of thing.
Jonathan Kasdan and Lawrence Kasdan. And Lawrence Kasdan was part of the original.
So are they father and son, do you think?
Can I quickly look this up? Okay, original directors Phil Lord and Christopher Miller fired in June 2017 following, quote, creative differences, unquote, with Lucasfilm, and Ron Howard hired as their replacement. It's also one of the most expensive films ever made. Given its enormous budget, its box office indicates that it probably made a loss. Doing a bit of rule of thumb calculation of rentals from its box office.
Do you think they got cocky?
I think they did. Yep, Jonathan Kasdan is one of Lawrence Kasdan's kids. Born just a year after me.
So he is a Star Wars baby.
Yeah.
He's literally grown up on this.
Although, let's confess, Dr. Blair.
What?
That you are, after a fashion, also yourself a Star Wars baby, because...
I think I'm a Ghostbusters baby.
Is it not the case that your parents' first date...
One of their early dates was to go and see Star Wars, the original Star Wars.
Very promising.
That didn't mean they enjoyed it. And my dad was huge into sci-fi, but that wasn't really his bag. He was a Douglas Adams type.
Yeah. On the spectrum of how cerebral sci-fi is, this is not at the cerebral end of the cerebrality spectrum.
He liked the mystery stuff and the satirical stuff.
No one in the Star Wars universe is going to invent time travel, because that's going to lead to questions about the nature of physics, whereas that's not really what the science fiction elements are supposed to do in this galaxy far, far away a long time ago. Anyway, we're just watching it again now. Let's call it a night.
Thank you for tuning in to this Cozy Pea Pod production. If you got something out of this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you could give us a good rating wherever you're accessing it and share it with someone you know will find it really interesting. If early releases and bonus content sound appealing, visit patreon.com/avcultures and join one of our support tiers. If you want to help the show but can't manage a membership, we'd love you to join the conversation with AV Cultures Pod on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. The music is Common Ground by Airtone, used under a 3.0 Creative Commons non-commercial license and is available at ccmixer.org. I've been Paula Blair, and you've been a fantastic audience. Mind yourselves, until next time.